Hola, Betty.
An Ugly Betty podcast.
It's, hola.
No, there's an H in it.
Hola, Modis. I'm Ben, and joining me as ever
is Tony. Hola, how's it going?
Hola, Tony. Well, we've made it. We've actually got here to episode 2, The Box and the Bunny.
Yay! Woo!
So thank you to everyone who has listened to our first episode. We know it might have been a little on the long side, but you know, we're new to all this and figuring it out. But we hope you enjoyed, and you know, we're gonna hopefully tighten things up a bit. And yeah, I'm excited to get into this episode with you, Tom.
Yeah, it should be good. I really enjoyed the last one, so I'm just eager to get stuck into this one now and see what we discover along the way.
Likewise. So without further ado, let's talk all things The Box and the Bunny. Okay, so the episode starts when we see Betty setting up her desk with her good luck charm, the bunny. And the bunny is very Betty, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very, it stands out, shall we just say that?
And, you know, Mark just completely fakes kindness to Betty in this moment. Like, you know, he can just tell he's beginning, oh God, what is she doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's typical Mark, isn't it? You know, sort of tries to be nice to her face, but you can obviously tell that, he is very fake. And everyone else as well, like everyone else looking, sort of judging her for just dressing up her desk.
But, you know, fair play to Betty to just staying true to herself after the events of the pilot episode. Very brave.
Yeah, I mean, she's just herself, isn't she? She likes to, you know, put a mark on things, and, you know, she thinks by dressing up her desk, you know, it's her desk, you know, she's part of somewhere now, but obviously other people don't see her that way. They prefer things very minimal, very clean. But I can totally see Betty's side of things. I like to have things on my desk as well. Bit too much, I think. Bit cluttered, my desk. So I know where she's coming from.
Yeah, likewise. Organized chaos, though, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So as we move on, Betty goes and meets with Daniel, and he kind of explains the way the press works to her, that it's very image-focused. And Betty makes a remark about Daniel's shoes that he's not too happy about. But, you know, Daniel being Daniel, he says he wants to get Betty in on the meeting to discuss the first issue that he's releasing. And he calls Betty and him a team.
Yes, which I think is quite nice. And, you know, she's only just started as well, but saying, yeah, I want you to be a part of this interview, which is for a well-known actress, Natalie Wittman, which she's obviously very excited about because it seems that she's a fan of the film series that Natalie is a part of. So that's nice to, you know, bring her in when she's just started, again, after the events of the first episode as well. So it's nice to see that she's included.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel's still early days at this point, but there is some growth there. He's slowly starting to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's nice that, you know, he thinks, right, we should be part of a team now. But then, you know, he calmly reminds her of his coffee order at the same time. So, you know.
Yes. Yeah. A bit like, yeah, we're a team, but know your place.
Yeah, exactly. Get me my coffee. It's this, it's that. Off you go.
So we then get another update from Fashion TV, which is hosted by Lucy Davis, star of Wonder Woman and The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Like, this was one of the discoveries that, you know, we've kind of made all these years later, as she's gone on to be a big star. But like, I really love her.
Yeah. Likewise, because I think it was only sort of last year, was it, when I was rewatching it at some point, and I noticed it was her, and I think I messaged you because I was like, "Oh my god, did you realise she was in this?" Because I didn't.
Correct, and I was like, "What?" But yeah, she was just as great as ever, and whilst hosting Fashion TV, she talks about Wilhelmina losing out to Daniel on the editor-in-chief of Mode magazine job. And there's also a bit of discussion about Faye Summers as well. And I just want to put out there, I loved that Faye's lifespan was listed as 19?? To 2006. Ever the diva, even in death, apparently.
Yeah, not quite revealing her age, yeah.
But she, you know, she gives off proper Anna Wintour vibes. And yeah, you know, we get a little bit more insight on Faye's death here.
Yeah, so it mentions that she died in a car crash after she lost control of it. So I don't think we had that information in the last episode. If we did, somebody, you know, shoot me down now. But I'm pretty sure we didn't have full detail. So it's interesting to know. And I think they had a shot of the car as well, all smashed to pieces and God knows.
Yes.
What. So interesting.
So yeah, it sets up a little more with the mystery and the importance of Faye as this looming presence in death. So the next thing we see is Daniel going to meet with his father, Bradford, and you know, Bradford makes Daniel aware of what the book is and has been. He's like, you know, have you been getting this? And yeah, it's clearly obvious that Daniel just doesn't have a clue what his dad's talking about.
Yeah, he's, you know, you just take one look at his face and he's completely clueless, isn't he? He's like, what is the book? Why should I be receiving this time thing? And Bradford's like, oh, for God's sake, you know, that's just another thing that he doesn't know about.
Yeah, you can just see that look of what have I let myself in for with this kind of thing on Bradford's face.
Yeah, it's like, you know, should I have left this with my son? It, you know, is he going to be reliable enough? Yeah, so it, obviously Bradford is just maybe questioning whether it was the right thing, but he's telling Daniel, right, this is what the book is. You need to, you know, get this from Wilhelmina. And you need to check it, and you've got to make sure everything's absolutely accurate for it to go out for to be published.
Yeah, and to the surprise of nobody, Wilhelmina has got the book, and you know is very keen to take control. She's fierce. She's fierce.
As always, we love her, but she's a bitch.
Yeah, but she's the bitch that you love to hate.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then we see Natalie Whitman, and she's come in and had this photo shoot done, and we can see that she's very clearly offended by the fact that the magazine is photoshopping her, you know, to an almost unrecognizable portrayal that doesn't resemble her at all, you know, and I think it's very telling of the Mode culture when Wilhelmina turns around and says, we aren't about normal, but aspirational, as if to say, you know, you should be ashamed that you look like this. This is what you should be aiming for.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and even, is it Natalie's like PA or manager as well? Like, he's very much encouraging the pictures to go thinner, thinner, uh-huh. thinner. And, you know, you can quite clearly see that she is not comfortable with that. But everybody in that room, apart from Betty, thinks that this is the way it should be. And, you know, I can well imagine that in the fashion world, of course, they're going to see it that way. Especially in a magazine as sort of renowned as Mode. Like, you know, Mode is not known for having sort of, I don't even want to say heavy set girls, because even Natalie is not heavy set.
I didn't think Natalie wasn't. No, I would say normal sized human beings.
Exactly. There was nothing disgusting about her in the slightest, but they, you know, and they're talking as if, you know, she's like, I don't know, like £100 or something. For goodness sake.
Yeah, honestly, they talk about her in such a derogatory way, and you just think, oh, like, are they seeing what I'm seeing? Like, what is wrong here, you know? And it's quite understandable why she would take offence to that. And it's funny because I guess, like, you know, 14 years on in the present day, this is something that's still very much occurring. And yes, people are becoming a bit more better at calling out, like, size shaming and stuff. But let's be honest, in the world of the media and social media and magazines, you know, the use of Photoshop and filters and airbrushing, it's still as rife as ever.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think it's always going to be that way, you know, like, you'll take a look at a picture and, like you said, it'll be airbrushed to the 90 eyeballs, you know, and it's quite clear, like, sometimes you'll look at a picture of a celebrity and like, well, that doesn't even look like them. And it's because they just don't want any... How would you say, like, they don't want any errors on that person. They want them to want to make them sort of what's the word,
they portray a version that they think this is like the peak human being, and this would you be the be all and end all if you reach that point, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's very sort of godlike, isn't it, that they, you know, this is what this person is, you know, there is absolutely nothing wrong with them. You want to be like this person, but actually that they are just a person. But yeah, unfortunately the media, it just it retouches.
Yeah, it uses
anything.
Them like a piece of meat.
Yeah, definitely.
And what I also picked up on here is that, you know, when Betty makes a comment, you know, saying that she didn't mind what the unretouched photos look like, Daniel says to her that she should go with the vibe of the room, even if she doesn't agree, especially if it's best for the magazine. And this is where Daniel's immaturity is still coming through at this point, and where you think, oh, you know, you were doing so well, and then something stupid like that comes out of your mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Because instead of trying to make, like, the magazine his own, and even sort of make it better, but he's just going along with the crowd type thing. He, you know, he very much wants to be, well, this is the way it is. Like, just go with it. It doesn't matter what your opinions are, Betty. This is the way it is, and it's not going to change, full stop.
So Daniel also reminds Wilhelmina that he's the editor-in-chief and demands that he should be getting the book at the end of each day, which Wilhelmina is visibly not happy about. Can't think why.
Yes, and there's quite a crowd there as well when they're having this discussion. So she tries to protest, you know, in the nicest way possible. I use inverted commas there, by the way.
The nicest Wilhelmina way possible.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, well, you don't need to see this, Daniel. You know, we've got it all under control. What would you need the book for? But, you know, he puts his foot down. And I think it is just because they're in front of a crowd as well. And she doesn't want to make too much of a scene at the minute because, you know, he's making a valid point that he is editor-in-chief and she's not. So... she begrudgingly agrees to give him the book, but then walks away and has a bit of a temper tantrum.
And let's be honest, that was probably the moment where she's thought, I'm not letting this drop.
Yeah, exactly. And she's not going to. She's Wilhelmina Slater. And, you know, she is going to, like, take things her way right to the very end.
For sure. And we'd expect nothing less from a diva like her. So then Betty goes and notices that the bunny on her desk is gone. And whilst that's happening, Wilhelmina goes off to rant about Daniel whilst Mark is massaging her feet. He is the ultimate lapdog. But, you know, straight away, Will is scheming to find a way to sabotage Daniel.
Yeah. Exactly, because they come up with the idea that they're going to leave the unattached photos of Natalie Wittman in the book, book and then thinking, well, he's not going to look at this properly. He'll just bypass it. He's not going to know. And they're going to put the blame on him.
Yeah, it's such a nasty move for her to make. And, you know, not long after this, Betty sees Natalie upset regarding the Photoshop photos. And, you know, she kind of just squishes herself down till she's invisible. And you can kind of see the effect that, you know, this must have on someone mentally, on, you know, in terms of their self-esteem. And after that, Betty goes down to the canteen to microwave herself some empanadas, much to the disgust of the other Mode employees. Personally, they looked amazing. You know, I would have gladly had lunch with Betty. But thankfully, Christina and her friends do have lunch with Betty. And, you know, they have a discussion about Photoshop. And then Natalie comes over to join them. And, you know, it's quite visible that they're getting along and that Natalie feels very comfortable around these other normal kind of women. And seeing this bond between the girls and Natalie makes Amanda, who's looking on, very, very jealous. I liked this scene. I just thought it was... This is kind of the heart of the show, moments like this.
Yeah, I really liked it because it was a nice moment that you saw Natalie as a person, that she wasn't a famous actress and that she didn't want to be with the popular crowd with all the other Mode workers or anyone like Amanda, you know. She saw Betty, she smelled her food and she was like, you know what, these are my people over here. And so she goes and joins them. She even has some of Betty's food as well and be like, you know what, I'm going to eat this. Who cares? They're only going to retouch my pictures anyway. So what does it matter? And she just seems really chilled out and nice. And yeah, and Amanda is clearly not happy.
Absolutely. There's no kind of ego there whatsoever. You know, she finds this little moment of happiness in the normal people. And, you know, the fact that Amanda is jealous of it, it speaks volumes to where Amanda is at this early on in the show, because, you know, the fact that she can't understand that, you know, being nice will actually gravitate people towards you instead of push you away. Like, you know, it seems such an alien concept to her.
Well, yeah, because she's, I mean, I don't know how long she's been working at Mode. I can't remember if she's said or not yet how long she's been there. But she's quite clear of the way it works is that you have to be mean and nasty in order to get places. And if you're not part of the it crowd, then you're going to be gone and that's the end of it. So that's the way she is. And to be honest, she was probably, I can probably see her as that being that type of person in sort of school as well, being part of the crowd. So she is probably second nature to her to, you know, sort of pick fun of somebody like Betty and about what she's eating, blah blah blah. But then when somebody like Natalie Whitman, who's clearly famous, comes in, she thinks Natalie's gonna have the same opinion, but she's not, because she is a human being.
Yeah, Natalie just goes totally against the grain. And I also just want to say again, Becky Newton as Amanda, you know, you and I love her so much, Tone, as you know, we can't stress this enough. But like, you know, even at this point, she really shows her range of skills in the different emotions and the comedy and the drama and the serious moments. Like, you know, she's a very nuanced actress who doesn't get enough recognition.
Yeah, absolutely. Because at this stage as well, we only know her as sort of one, like the one side of Amanda, who is mean Amanda. But as we go on, we definitely get to see her other sides and her sensitivity. And, you know, it is really great that she can explore that character and show that the different sides of her as well, and not just be, you know, one type of person and that's it.
Completely agree. I couldn't have said it better. I really couldn't. So next we have the masked woman who we met at the end of the last episode having a catch up with Wilhelmina. where they plot to prove that Bradford tampered with Faye's breaks and to remove Daniel as editor-in-chief. So it's very clear that this mystery figure is really gunning for the men of the Mead family.
And we're still, if when we first watched the show, we were still wondering, well, is this Faye Summers, and if not, then who is it? So we're still trying to guess at this stage. And why, if it's not Faye, why does she have it out for the men, of Mead Publications? What does she have against them? And so it's always nice to go back and revisit that.
Yeah, I love that they just add that sprinkle of mystery in, because it is for the most part, a comedic show, but it's got this little undertone of mystery that just keeps you coming back because you want answers. And I definitely back at this point, I was definitely on the team Faye is alive kind of train. Couldn't have been more wrong. Spoilers.
No, definitely the furthest thing away from Faye.
So then Bradford meets with his PI, and the PI makes Bradford aware that Faye's estate is going on sale, which really rattles Bradford, who reveals that he's got a key to Faye's place and he will personally go and look for any evidence that would be incriminating against him, which instantly raises loads of questions like, why does Bradford have a key to Faye's place? Were they an item? We haven't met Mrs. Mead at this point. And what would he find and what would be incriminating towards him? What's he done that he wants to hide? Another little mystery here.
And you just kind of wonder, well, how dodgy is Mr. Mead? What's he got himself into?
And at this point, I'm like, I trusted Jim Robinson more than I trust Bradford Mead.
I mean, I really can't say anything because I did not I didn't really watch Neighbours, but I'm going to take your word for it.
So then we go back to Maud, and Betty gets an email showing her bunny with, like dead cross eyes. And it's in a hanging noose, someone's toying with her, and quite rightly, she's a little upset about this.
Yeah, and it is just like, again, I think we go back to how Mode is like a school. And, why on earth would somebody just want to take a stuffed bunny and just go to the effort of taking pictures and leaving them as ransom notes? Like, who has the time for this? For goodness sake.
Yeah, literally, it makes you think, A, what are these people getting paid for? And B, like, are they still in high school right now?
Just, but obviously they all think it's a big joke, don't they? They all thought she was ridiculous for having the stuffed bunny, so now they're like, well, we're gonna have our own little fun now. So they think that it's quite amusing to just toy with Betty in this way, and think that they, sort of get into her as well. To, try and drive her away, as it were.
Next, Mark gives Daniel the book, and despite vowing to take it seriously, when Amanda offers him a dirty night in, he gladly accepts, and Betty finds that he's left the book behind, so she decides to take it home to Queens, which kicks off the main plot of the episode. And when she gets back to Queens, she reveals she has the book, much to Justin's excitement. Like, that kid is stoked.
Yeah, I mean, can I just say to begin with that it didn't take long for Daniel to get distracted, did it? I mean, he looked for at that book for all of 2 seconds, and then Amanda waltzes in. Whether that was, a plan to try and get him to, distracted and leave the book there, who knows? But he, you know, he was, it did the job. He got distracted right away and said, right, this can keep till tomorrow. And he walks out. It's like, well, it's nice to know that you're taking your job seriously, Daniel.
He's a hot-blooded male, and he really needs to learn to keep it in his pants a bit more at this point.
Yeah, which clearly he does not do.
So Justin is mega excited to see the book and the mock-up of the issue, and he immediately notices that Betty is credited as Betsy Suarez. And when Ignacio has a look at the book, he says that Latinos should be in there more, and I just think that's really relevant still now, in terms of visibility of non-white people in the mainstream media. You know, obviously we've got Black Lives Matter happening now, but you know, I think we have to look at all Black, Asian, ethnic minority groups here, and you know. Again, it's sad that, you know, 14 years on, it's taken us this long to prove Ignacio right, you know, that there does need to be more visibility in the
Yeah.
media.
And again, it's going to be one of those issues, I think, like with the whole sort of weight issue as well, that it's always going to be there, you know, as much as we as much as you know we try to establish that things need to be done. Again, like you said, we're 14 years on and it is still a growing matter. And although I think over time it has started, you know, to be a bit more, how do you say, like,
Representative.
yeah, exactly, you know, sort of Black, Latinos, Asian, you know, we have tried to represent them more in the media, but it's just it's something, unfortunately, that's always going to be just a bit of an issue. And you know, I think, well, why, you know, why does it matter? Why, you know, do magazines like this, for example, have to only have sort of white models as well? There does, you know, he's got an absolute point. There needs to be sort of more ethnicity in there, and you know, we do need more representation of that, and I fully support that, you know, something needs to be done.
And I think that, and I think that's what this show did so well. And I really do feel that this show was a trailblazer in this movement, in because this show, you know, really was so incredibly diverse. And you know, in some ways, you could say it was ahead of the time in that time. You know, you know, it's taken a while for other shows to follow suit, but I think, you know, Betty as a show proves, you know, that there is no place for racism in this world, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's what's on the inside that counts. Like, to me, it's just an alien concept to get my head around that someone could judge someone based on the color of the skin. I can't understand that.
Yeah, I know, and especially you know, sort of this year as well, the sort of events that played out, it absolutely does not matter. You know, it's always been an issue, even from, say, way back when. You know, how on earth are we still living in a time where, you know, people think, you know, care about the color of somebody's skin? Why? Like, it does not matter whether you're black, white, rainbow colored, you know what I mean? What matters is the person, and you know, whether they're a good person or a bad person. It certainly doesn't matter what race you are, what weight you are, you know, for goodness sake. What, I just can't understand why people cannot see this and why it continues to be an issue in, you know, sort of the 21st century.
I couldn't agree more. I really, really couldn't agree more. So, yeah, and also, you know, to make a point there as well, this show also very accurately represents how the media can influence the thinking of young people, because let's look at the way Justin reacts to the photos that he finds of Natalie in the book, which are the actual unretouched versions, not the Photoshop ones. And, he thinks it's repulsive, when Betty's like, no, this is great. And, you can just see that Justin's like, what? No, it isn't. And it's sad that a kid of his age would look at this and think that this perfectly normal looking woman was an unhealthy weight. It's very sad. And it's very sad that this trend has continued with kids.
Yeah, and it's just you kind of think, well, there's no wonder why there's bullying and things in schools when that things like that continue to be an issue, whether it's their weight or whether something simple as that they're wearing glasses, or it's just I think these are where this is where problems start, that they think a certain way in school, and then it obviously just becomes natural to be this way when they grow as well. And they need to be sort of taught, well, no, it doesn't matter. And it's nice that Betty says to Justin, well, I think she looks fine. She looks great, even though he's saying, oh, well, what? Why is she still fat? It's like, Betty is just trying to get through to him, well, she's not fat. How would you think that?
We need more Bettys in the world. We really do. And not long after this, Hilda comes home and she gives Betty some batteries off of Walter. Not the most exciting gift, Walter. You need to up your game, my dude. And then she soon finds herself having an argument when Gina Gambaro comes round demanding revenge for her broken television from the last episode and demands $4,000 for a new one. I mean, this girl has got real brass.
Yeah, I mean, who pays $4,000 for a TV anyway? Like, come on, for God's sake, is that really necessary? Like 4 grand. Who's just
Yeah,
gonna
I
have four
know, I
grand
know.
lying around? Jeez.
Like, yeah, clearly I need to be hanging around with the same people Gina does,
Yeah, I think she needs to remember that she's living in Queens.
Yeah, that 4 grand telly, it wouldn't be there much longer than the last TV.
Exactly. I think if Betty had a spare 4 grand just lying around, just for a rainy day, I don't think she her and her family would be living in Queens.
No, exactly. And look, no diss to any of our listeners in Queens. We love
Oh
each and
no,
every one
God.
of you, and we want to visit you.
Jeez.
But we've all got those places. We've got the similar kind of neighborhoods here in the UK too. So,
I mean, I live in the
we're all
Welsh
in this
Valleys.
together.
Like, come on. This is like the Welsh version of Queens.
And I live in the Lake District, which is the literal middle of nowhere. So believe me, we feel for you. We get the stick the same.
Yeah.
So anyway, after this amazing argument between these two fierce Latina women, we cut to Bradford breaking into phase. And whilst doing this, he steals a music box. And at the same time, Gina breaks into the Suarez house at night to steal the book.
Yeah, so obviously it's kind of sort of a comedy moment with Gina, isn't it? It couldn't be more different. Gina just trying to get into the house to try and steal the book, and then you've got Bradford trying to steal the music box. And again, we kind of wonder, well, what's significant about this music box?
Yes, and this is something that obviously will play out. So yeah,
Out.
Betty wakes up to find that the book's gone, but she does get a note that's left for her from Gina demanding a new TV in return for the book. You can imagine Betty's reaction, and Gina's got real balls. I'll give her that. And across town in New York, Daniel and Amanda wake up together after their night of passion, and he learns that Betty's got the book, and Betty kind of tries to take Hilda's advice of lying to him, and you know, it's very evident that she's a bad liar. And you know, you've got Amanda there saying, like, oh, just fire her already.
Yeah, I mean, Amanda's kind of like sort of the bad devil on his shoulder, isn't she? Like, quite literally in that moment. And just trying to get, you know, Betty out of the picture so she can have the job anyway. So she can have the penny and the bun. But Betty, I think she needs, certainly needs more, she needs to learn more on how to lie properly. And I guess that's where working at Mode comes in. Very handy, actually.
Yeah, and whilst on the phone with Betty, Daniel learns that the unretouched photos made it into the book and immediately sends a car to Betty's house, which, you know, it causes a bit of a panic in the Suarez household. So Hilda does what Hilda does best. She breaks into Gina's house and fights her, allowing Betty to sneak in and look for the book. And honestly, I thought that this scene just played out like a telenovela itself, including Jeff Beal's music over the top. And I was in hysterics when Hilda literally rips Gina's hair extensions out.
Yeah, it's your typical sort of hoochie mama cat fight, isn't it? Like, pulling of the hair, claws are right out. Yeah, it was a great scene. Great scene.
So then we cut to Mode, where Wilhelmina gets in an elevator with Daniel. And Daniel actually stands up to Wilhelmina here and calls her out on the Natalie Whitman photos. You know, Daniel's starting to grow a bit of a spine against her now and knows, you know, this is my competition here. And, you know, he makes a real savage dig about Wilhelmina's age. And you can tell she's getting really rattled this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Because he is sort of growing a pair, isn't he? And I think Wilhelmina thought there was going to be a piece of cake to just walk all over him and get him out of there. But, I mean, it was lucky that Betty did actually take the book home in a way, because otherwise Daniel wouldn't have known about the unretouched photos, because he wouldn't have had a chance to look at the book. And, you know, he wouldn't have been on top of Wilhelmina's game then. So it was quite lucky that those events actually sort of played out the way that they did, because at this point, yeah, he is one step ahead of Wilhelmina, which is hard to do, I think.
Yeah, I mean, props to him for playing the game. I think he's done the right thing here. So after this plays out, Betty gets another bunny ransom photo whilst she's in the car going to work. You know, like we said, who has got the time to do this, really? But we also learn that the car driver is a spy working for Wilhelmina. He overhears Betty talking about Gina stealing the book and tells Willie about the theft. You know, she's got eyes and ears everywhere.
Yeah, I'm going to throw in another Game of Thrones reference here, you know, this episode. She's very much sort of like Queen Cersei, isn't she? She's got her, you know, her little spies everywhere. It's very much like a King's Landing world, and it's about sort of who you know and what you can do for them, and probably how much you can probably pay as well to get this information. So yeah, she's obviously going to have her spies everywhere, and Betty's not going to know any better either, is she? She's not going to think that, you know, just a driver is going to be telling Wilhelmina, you know, all of this information. She's not going to know that. But yeah, I think she needs to.
I think we kind of get an insight to Betty's naivety at this point in the series. You know, she's already struggled to lie when Hilda told her to lie to Daniel. And now, you know, we see the naivety of that, you know, she wouldn't expect there to be eyes and ears everywhere. She's, you know, where Daniel has easily clocked Wilhelmina and, you know, begun standing up to her, Betty's still somewhat oblivious to the scheming going on behind the scenes in the world of mode.
Yeah, she definitely is. You know, she's doesn't see a fault in just blurting out this incriminating information when really she should be thinking, oh, well, this is, you know, sort of a mode or a mead car, and that, you know, that they could just be listening in. Because even if that guy wasn't working for Wilhelmina, he was certainly he would have been working for Bradford. So he could have just as easily have told Bradford this information if he wasn't working for Wilhelmina. So I think she has to be careful of who, you know, what she's saying and who she's talking to, because it is going to be used against her at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And, you know, Betty comes to the most Betty-like decision, that it's best to tell Daniel the truth about Gina, which she does, when she gets to work. And Daniel's like, right, that's it, get the checkbook, we're going to Queen's. And Betty's like, no, you know, you've got this meeting. And Daniel goes there just to be taunted by Wilhelmina, and he's like, no, I'm going to reschedule this by 3 hours. I'm going to review the book. You know, I'm not going to let on what's going on. And, you know, he's like, no, I'm going to try and take control of this situation. And you can kind of see the panic in his face here. And then whilst this is all going on, Betty gets a pic of the bunny down the toilet. And, you know, she actually calls out the mode staff here. And, you know, I love it, you know, because she's like, you know, you can take my bunny, but you can't take my spirit. And, you know, that's kind of really just telling her, Betty, in this episode, is that she's one to stay true to herself.
Yeah, she is. And it's like that through the whole series, isn't it? That, you know, she's sort of... she's brought down and again and again and again and beat down, and she basically, excuse my language, she says, fuck it, I am who I am, you know. These people, they're not going to get the better of me. Like you said, is that fantastic quote, you know, you can take my bunny but you can't take my spirit. And that is just, it's so Betty, and it's brilliant, and I love her.
It just sums up this show so perfectly. And, you know, Daniel, keeping his word, takes Betty to Gina's house, where they find Walter installing a TV for Gina, because she reveals that she's actually sold the book to someone else. You know, and during this all going on and all this palaver, you know, Walter tries to win Betty back, and he's like, oh, I'm not into Gina. You know, and he kind of reminisces about the first kiss, and I'm like, oh, I do feel for you here, Walter, I do, but you're just such a dweeb and it's not going to work out.
Yeah, and it's the wrong time, Walter.
Yeah, it's like, look, your timing couldn't have sucked more. You're in the middle of a crisis here and you don't even realise it. Like, what is wrong with you, man?
Like, you know, obviously he must be listening to the conversation. Like, you know, surely he'd think that there's a better time to try and speak to Betty about this, but no, apparently now is the perfect time. Really, Walter? Really?
Yeah, honest to god. So as all this fiasco erupts, you know, Fashion TV starts reporting that the Natalie Wittman photos may have been leaked unretouched. And, you know, we then see Mark turning up with the book after visiting Queens. And, you know, he gives it to Wilhelmina because they're plotting to embarrass Daniel in front of Bradford.
Oops, surprise, surprise. Shock, horror.
And, you know, unbeknownst to Daniel that they have the book, you know, he and Betty are in the car back from Queens, and you can just see he's really defeated. And Betty's like, look, why don't you just tell the truth? It's the right thing to do. And you know, he's like, you know what? I've got nothing to lose at this point. So he takes Betty's advice. He tells Natalie and the agent about what happened when they get back to Mode. The agent scolds Natalie about her weight in the middle of all this. Like, dude, like, this is shouldn't be your priority. You know, her weight in real life, like, the priority should be these photos. But even that in itself is so ridiculous. Like, the whole scenario is ridiculous. You know, it just creates such a mess. And then, you know, Amanda comes and rubs salt in the wound, and she's all like, you know, Betty, you should quit before you're fired. And, you know, she gives Betty back her box of belongings with the bunny all cut up, revealing, you know, that she was responsible for all this taunting throughout the episode.
And she, you know, she obviously like jumps the gun a bit, doesn't she? Like, you know, thinking, well, Betty's obviously going to quit after this now because it's her fault that the book was in Queens and then got stolen, and everything else that has come out. And oh my God, there's unretouched pictures of Natalie Wittman, blah blah blah. But you know, so she's jumping the gun and thinking, well, if all the events from the previous episode with the whole modeling situation didn't cut her down, this surely will. And here you are, here's your you know, your beaten up bunny as well. Take that, bye.
Yeah, classic bully move, classic bully move. And you know, Betty kind of takes it to heart and thinks, oh, maybe she's right. You know, she gathers her belongings and gets in the lift, and you know, she bumps into Natalie, and you know, she tells the truth to her as well and said, this is my fault. It's my fault they leaked. I took the book home. You know, I'm so sorry. And you know, and you know, Betty just kind of has this really lovely moment where she's just like, you know what, for what it's worth, you know, the Umi Touch photos I thought were very beautiful, and you know, I would love to look like you. And I just thought, oh, you know, Natalie really needed to hear that. But even like in this really shitty moment for Betty, she's still putting others before herself.
Yeah, which she always does. She always puts other people's happiness before her own, and it's just it's kind of sad when you think about it, isn't it? Because she never thinks about, you know, what's best for her. It's always about what's for best for other people, and I think that in itself has pros and cons, doesn't it? But it's a very nice moment, and you can tell that. That point that Natalie is like, right, we're going to do something about this. You know, we can't let this poor girl quit. You know, it's not her fault, and damn it, I want those pictures out there anyway.
And yeah, and that's exactly what happens. You know, Natalie asks Daniel not to fire Betty, and you know, she does come up with a solution. And at the same time, Daniel tells Bradford the truth about what's gone on. And where you expect Bradford to like explode, actually, it's a real tender moment between the two where he's actually like, no, I'm proud of you taking responsibility and telling the truth, you know. And that was a real tender moment between these two figures as well. So yeah, Natalie comes up with this solution, and you know, just as Willie's all like, oh yeah, Bradford, I've just happened to have found the book. Oh, isn't it great? Blah blah blah. She turns on fashion TV to see that Natalie has agreed to publish the unretouched photos to expose the hypocrisy of the fashion industry. And you know, I just loved that. I just thought that's such a cool, empowering thing to do, Natalie. And you know, I love that Daniel gets to really stick it to Mark and Wilhelmina and be like, ha ha ha, you know, he just totally gloats in the face. He's like, yep, I won this game, bitch.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like 2-0. What else are you going to throw at me? Just you wait, Daniel.
You know, the takeaway from the episode is really that, you know, the truth does pay off, and it's better to tell the truth, you know. And you know, doing so worked out well for Betty, for Daniel, and for Natalie, you know. And you know, the universe gives Betty some karmic balance when it sends Christina back with Betty's bunny, all repaired. And then Betty gets Daniel some new shoes, and you know, Daniel's like, look, I'm going to go over this book properly. And the first thing he does is pick up what Justin picked up on the spelling mistake on Betty's name. And Betty, you know, really appreciates this, and she feels re-empowered. And she and her bunny go and stand up to Amanda. And I thought, you know what? Good on you, girl. You've solved this yet again,
Yeah,
Betty.
she does what she does best, and it's just I can't express enough of how much I love the character of Betty, and that you know she still stands for you know what she believes in, and she wants to do what she wants to do, and it's just brilliant. No matter how much she has to go through, when all these people bullying her all the time, you know they. Even if her spirit is dampened a little bit, you know, she's not going to give up, and it's just it's poor Betty.
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, she's really inspiring. And if there was anyone that I would want to help me in the moment of crisis, I think it would be Betty
Yeah,
Suarez.
we all need a Betty Suarez in our lives.
Yes, we do. Amen to that. Yes, we do.
Hashtag bring back
So then we
Betty.
end the episode. Hashtag bring back Betty, yes. And we end the episode with one last sprinkle of mystery as the masked woman calls Daniel to taunt him about his father, who at the same time burns a picture of him with the late great Faye Summers.
Dun dun dun.
No, it was a real great stinger to the episode, and you know, certainly sets up events to come in the coming episodes. On the whole, I really, really enjoyed this episode, Tone.
Yeah, I did. It just has, you know, the mixture of sort of the comedy and the tender moments, you know, and it hits. I think, you know, I think we spoke a lot about it, but you know, all of the just the sensitive issues that are still going on nowadays, like you said, it was ahead of its time, that's for sure. It hit a lot of topics that are still going on here.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think if I had to show someone who's never seen the show an episode to really say this is what it's all about, I think this is an episode I would show them, because I think you're right. It sums up the comedy moments well, it sums up the tender moments well, it's got the mystery in there. And you know, the themes of dealing with bigotry in all its forms, be it sexism, being it about someone's size, being it about their race, it's explored really, really well in this episode. And I just think this episode just really reflects what the show's about.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is one that I always remember as well. I don't know whether it's because of the whole bunny situation. I don't know, but I always remember this episode. It always sticks out in my mind.
Any favourite moments in the episode for you, Tony?
I did have a favorite moment. Yes. Yeah. So I think it was when Natalie went to sit with Betty and everyone at lunch, because you know it's just. It's nice to see that she was so down to earth and that she would rather eat and speak to who she wants to rather than stick with the crowd. You know, and it's just so nice that just a really, you know, popular actress goes and sits with Betty. And you know, because Betty is obviously shocked as well that the Natalie Whitman goes to sit with her, and yeah, I think it was just a nice
Yeah,
moment.
I think I'm actually going to have to agree with you on this. I just think it
Yeah.
really, was so tender, and it was just one of those moments that just really shows the warmth of Betty that she has, and same with Christina too, and just that there is hope even in, the darkest places, in this case Mode magazine,
Exactly. It was just nice. And, I wish I God, I wish that where I worked that, popular actress would come in and sit with me, have a
Yes,
chat with
me
me.
too, me too. Me too, though, given I work in a hospital, probably best that, they don't come in, because I wouldn't wish ill health on anyone, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even in my office at the minute, but there's no chance of famous actresses coming to see me at work anyway. So only in my dreams would that happen.
Well, let's go from dreams to our fact-finding missions for another installment of
Tony's Trivia.
Yes. Tony's trivia. Here we go. I didn't actually find that much about this episode, if I'm completely honest.
Okay.
So, I mean, something that I actually noticed myself rather than finding online, and I don't know whether you noticed it, but they had like a shot on fashion TV of the poster for Natalie Wittman's new film. And to me, it actually looked just like the poster for Bridget Jones's Diary.
Yes, I actually did pick up on this. I did pick up on this. I was like, wow, the resemblance is uncanny, like both Natalie with the many, the side, even the font,
Yeah,
everything.
the text, honestly, everything just screamed Bridget Jones to me, and I thought, oh, that was quite cool. So I thought I'd note that down. Just because
And when you think about it, you could draw parallels between Natalie and Renee Zellweger, who kind of faced similar things about her weight when she put it on for the role.
actually, now that you say it, because she did, didn't she? And then obviously she lost it all afterwards and things. But yeah, my God, I didn't even think about that when I made this comparison.
No,
So
that
well
literally
done.
just popped into my head now. Yeah, the magic of podcasting, like it just happens on the fly.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Win. So yeah, so I had a look about on sort of IMDb and Wiki, because they are my friends. Didn't find a whole lot about this particular episode. But let's have a look. So what was interesting is that when Betty was being driven back to the Mode offices after losing the book, you can see out of the back of the window that they're driving away from Manhattan, but actually they're supposed to be driving towards it. So I think that was a bit of a just a nice little thing to notice in there, a bit of a boob.
Oops.
But yeah, we always like those types of mistakes, don't we? I mean, it's nice to sort of pick up on them and see what went wrong.
It just always reminds me of the classic, Velociraptors running away into thin air in Jurassic Park.
Exactly. Or the Starbucks coffee cup in Game of Thrones. Who can forget that one?
Who let that slide, huh? Huh?
And then there was a bottle of water a few episodes on.
Yeah, they really gave up towards the end of that show, but that's a whole other podcast in
That's another
itself.
podcast, which I was thinking of the other day, by the way, when I was watching Game of Thrones and thinking we should do
It is.
this.
If there's a demand for this, if there's a demand for me and Tony to let our minds run wild on Game of Thrones, let us know.
Yes, if any Betty fans out there love Game of Thrones, please let us know and we will create that podcast. We'll add it to the list of all the other podcasts we're going to make.
Oh yes, we ain't going nowhere, guys.
Going nowhere. Also, when Bradford is in the park and he's reading a German newspaper, and the PI comes along and he points out that he actually doesn't speak German, but Bradford says that he doesn't need to because he owns it. And apparently, according to Wiki, this was a reference to the German telenovela. Oh God! Now this is where my German fails me, because I really did fail at German, and I can't read my own writing. So I think it's Willbeat in Berlin, which was also based on Yo Soy Betty LaFay, and it actually means love with / with Berlin. So apparently there was a German telenovela which was pretty much like Ugly Betty, which I did not know. So I don't know.
Didn't know this either.
Yeah, so
no, I didn't know that.
So apparently it was given just a little, the slightest nod towards that. So I thought that was quite interesting. And then this episode had 14.2 million viewers in the US, which made it the second most watched episode of the series, behind the first one, of course.
Oh wow. Yeah. And it held strong. That's good. Yeah. People came back.
They loved the bunny. They loved the bunny. So yes, unfortunately, that's all I have.
Well, thank you as ever for your insights, Tony. Always interesting. Thanks for bringing it to the table.
My pleasure. See you next week with the next episode of Tony's Trivia.
All right, Tony, let's rewind and just go for a look back at some of the more memorable lines of the episode. I'm going to start with a line from Gina Gambaro, which really tickled me, and I don't know why, but it honestly really tickled me. She goes, "Remember, Betty, I'm a bad seed. I did a year in juvie." And I'm like, yeah, you're a bad bitch,
1 year
Gina.
In juvie, woo. Yeah, that was quite a funny one. So there was one actually that the TV reporter played by Lucy Davis said, I think it was towards the beginning of the episode, where she was saying something and then she says, "Daniel Mead, slutty sire of parent company Mead Publications." And it's just, you know, just that constant dig of how much of a playboy Daniel is, that, you know, even fashion TV has to needle at that all of the time.
Yeah, I really howled at that. That was really funny. I actually had a quote from Ignacio that I wrote down this time, and this literally made me laugh out loud. It's when he sees Betty like trawling through all the trash, and he's like, "See, this is why I don't want us to have a dog." And I was just like, oh my God, like savage Ignacio, savage.
Like, you know, for as much as he loves Betty, bloody hell.
Yeah, I was like, that's a bit extreme, you know, it's a bit extreme, but you know, it really did tickle me.
Yeah, and then just after that, actually, there was something where he says that he's going to make some breakfast, and Betty is like, "Well, Dad, what is food going to do for me right now? It's a crisis. I cook."
And do you know what? That was the beginning of a long-running tradition for Ignacio for the entirety of the series.
Yeah, cue to him making Amanda flan.
And can I just say, like, does anyone else watch Ugly Betty and think, I would actually really love to try a meal cooked for me by Ignacio Suarez? Yes. Like, he genuinely looks like he's a great cook.
I mean, you know me, Ben. I like my food.
As do I, my dear, as do I. So, I'm going to move us on away from food because it's something we can talk passionately about for a long time as well. But I'm going to have to go to a real highlight of the episode for me. It's Hilda's fight with Gina, and after she rips out her weave, she goes, "I guess we owe you $4,000 and 50 cents."
Yeah, I that one down. 50 cents for the
Like,
strand
Hilda
of
is the
weave.
queen of trash talk. She's the queen of trash talk. Like, oh, that tickled me so
I
much.
love Hilda. Like, it's just these little comments. Yeah, like, yes,
Yep,
bitch.
yep, yep.
Do you find that sometimes Bradford has some good one-liners? Because I've got here where him and Daniel are talking about the book. So he says to Daniel, "Have you been getting the book?" To which Daniel replies, "The book? What book are you referring to?" And Bradford, editor-in-chief for dummies.
Yeah, I must admit, and this is something I did pick up on, because I remember thinking when I heard that line, like, I always remembered Bradford being quite dry, like as a character, but actually he had got some real
Yeah,
zingers.
I know. Like, I was quite surprised actually. Like, you know what? You're quite funny when you want to be.
Well, I only have one more on my list, and it's when Daniel asks Betty where the book is, and Betty says, "Gina Gambaro has it." And Daniel goes, "Gambaro, Gambaro. Is that a new designer?" To which Betty replies, "No, it's an old slut." And I mean, 2 points on this. One, that Daniel is so clueless, and that yes, Gambaro does sound like it could be a fashion designer. But the fact that Betty is actually mean enough to call someone an old slut, I'm like, I feel like that's the nastiest we see Betty in the whole series.
Definitely. Oh God, like meow, claws are out. And I'm sure I had another one that was about Gina actually. I think it's when they've just discovered that Gina stole the book, blah blah blah. And they're in the living room. Justin's in there. So Hilda's like, "Justin, put your headphones on." And then as soon as he does, "That bitch." And it's just typical
Yes.
Hilda once again. Like, she's just, as soon as she gets her nasty head on, she is out to get people.
But you know, yet again, that's a prime example of Hilda being the matriarch of this family since losing their mother. Because you know, yet Hilda was scolding Betty last episode for missing Ignacio's birthday. But this episode, it's like, no, that's all forgotten. You going after my sister, bitch, and now I'm going after you.
Yeah, exactly. And it just, you know, you can, it just once again sort of proves that they're a family that sticks together no matter what. There's ups, there's downs, but as soon as somebody does something to hurt a family member, you know, they're all out, all guns blazing, and that's great. That is really great.
Tony, I've got to ask you, are you ready for another round of our favourite game?
I am indeed. Introduce it, Ben.
Let's do it. Let's play another edition of Hola or Ho
Woo.
No.
Okay, so the first one that I have was the first scene that Natalie Whitman was in, and she's got like a
Okay.
white top with like a black waistcoat, black jeans, and a short brown leather jacket with like a I guess like a sheepskin sort of lining around the edges. Do you remember that?
I do, I
And
do.
I gave that a whole la. Just because I thought that was really cool, really trendy. Yeah, I loved everything about that outfit.
It's a hola from me too, Tony, because I thought Natalie was a really stunning girl, and I thought her fashion outfits were very on point, and they really like represented who she was as a person. And yeah, absolute hola from me. I'm going to throw one from the actual very opening scene of Betty arriving to work. So yeah, she's got her usual bee necklace and her glasses, but she's kind of got this orange sleeveless cardigan on with like a black dress underneath with like a bit of pink floral print on. And then she's got like black tights and a little red bag and a watch. And do you know what? By Betty standards, I'm actually going to give it a whole hour. I thought it was a really nice dress and it looked nice with the dark tights. And you know, the orange cardigan wasn't too garish for me. I'm going to give this a whole hour.
Well, I had this one as well, Ben, but unfortunately, I gave her a whole no. I think it was just, yeah, I don't know whether it was the bright orange wool waistcoaty cardigan thing, but yeah, it was a no from me. So I've got an Amanda outfit now, where she had sort of
Ooh.
a white shirt, and then it was sort of like a long black skirt, maybe to sort of past her knees, I think it was, and then it had, I think it had like braces on it, just going up over the shoulders and things. And I give that a whole lot because I think she always pretty much looks really cool in her office wear.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree, because likewise, I think Amanda is just so on point. She always looks stunning. And I've got to agree, it was a flawless look. She worked it well. It's a hola from me. But I'm going to go from a hola to quite possibly the biggest ho no of the episode. And if you don't agree with me, then there's something wrong. It has to be Mark in his orange tracksuit
Gonna
that he
say
wore
that.
to burgle to go, that he went to buy, sorry, that he went to buy the book off Gina in. He's got this orange tracksuit on with a blue Mets hat. He's got black fingerless leather gloves and blue aviator glasses. It's just an absolute color coordinated mess, and it's beyond like Chavy. Even in Queens, you'd be judged on this.
It's the worst
Like, what was he
disguise.
thinking?
Like, you know.
Yeah, he may have well had a neon sign in his hand saying, "Look at me."
Exactly. He's like, you know, he may as well have had sneak written on him. Like, he couldn't have been more obvious of trying to do something dodgy if he tried. For goodness sake. Like, if you're gonna dress down, just do it normally, Mark.
Absolutely, absolutely. How about you anymore?
I have one more, and it was another Mark one, but it was a hola for me, which was a red shirt, red tie, a black waistcoat, and grey trousers, which I think he'd sort of changed into
Yes.
after he took off that horrendous tracksuit.
Yes.
It literally turned from a ho ho no into a hola.
Yes, it was like an actual Cinderella moment, and he saved his own bacon there. He saved his own bacon because that was a
I
great
really liked
look.
it.
I'm going to finish with a Hilda look. So she had her hair like back with a pink headband on, and she kind of had this like frilly pink blouse on with like dark blue jeans and a gold hoop earrings and gold bracelet. And to be honest, most of the time Hilda's outfits are a little garish and a little, what we'd say in the UK, chavvy. But this I actually really liked on Hilda, and I'm going to give her a hola.
For the life of me, really picture it in my mind, but I think I vaguely remember when you said about the headband, and I think I quite like that as well. I didn't have it written down, but yeah, we'll give her a whole lot.
Or you get a complimentary hola, Hilda. You know, we love you. We love you.
Always.
Shout out to Anna Ortiz.
We love you too.
So, Tony, that brings us to the end of episode 2 already.
I know. We're thrashing these episodes out now, aren't we? That's 2 down.
We're on a roll. We're finally on a roll. No, it's been an absolute pleasure as always. Thank you for being here with me. And I hope you've had as much fun as I have.
I really have. It's been an absolute joy. And, you know, I love talking about Betty. And, you know, I love these little segments. So, you know, especially the whole Lara or the whole no. It's brilliant because
best game ever. Hashtag Hola or Ho No for TV. Just let's get this going, folks. You know,
let's get it going.
There needs to be a new replacement now that we've lost Joan Rivers.
Yeah, you know? I was just about to say, you know, you've got to unleash your inner Joan Rivers, and I absolutely love to do that. You know, I love watching the red carpets.
We love it,
and I just love doing it.
Well, on that note, we hope you loved Hola or Ho No, and we hope that you've enjoyed all of this episode of Hola Betty. And until next time, guys, take care, and we'll speak with you soon.
Bye.